Good evening. My name is Rob Shepherd. I'm the pastor at Next Level Church. How are you guys doing tonight? Awesome to see you guys. If this is your first time and I haven't had a chance to meet you yet, hope to meet you after the service. And just if you're new, if this is your first time, we are in the process of going through something that we cannot explain away. It is a miracle. For 2 years, we have prayed that God would give us a building of our own. We rent this space, and God last week gave us a building of our own. And yeah, it's pretty crazy. And so a lot of you have a lot of questions, and I don't have time to answer all your questions. I will say that we were in the building this past Saturday, and we were doing demolition and all sorts of stuff that I'm not equipped to do. So I did a lot of spectating, and it was awesome. But if you're looking to jump in and to help, please stay tuned to Facebook. If you're not on Facebook, you can email tim@nextlevelchurch.net, and we'll make sure to get you plugged in. We're going to be working throughout the building this coming week, and next Saturday we'll have another work day. So if you're interested in plugging in, if you can wield a hammer, if you can... I don't know what else. I don't even know what tools exist. So if you have a toolbox, you're probably going to be put to use. If you like to clean, there's going to be lots of stuff for you to do. So stay tuned, and we'd love to. We need a lot of help in the next few weeks, including one thing that we do need help with. It is a free building, but there are still expenses, especially with an old building. So in the next few weeks, if God puts it on your heart to help us get in there, we do need some money to help. Purchase some things and help fix some things. And so if you want to pray and see where God would lead you to do that, everything that we get that is over our budgeted money that we need to pay salaries and rent and all that kind of stuff is going to be poured into the building in the next few weeks. Well, if you have a smartphone or a tablet and you'd like to follow along with some notes, there is a app out there. It's called YouVersion. And if you don't have this app already, go to the App Store and on your iPhone or Droid, and you can download YouVersion. It is a free Bible app. And on this app, there is a live section that you scroll down, you hit live, and then it asks for you. You can do a search for a church, and you can type in Next Level Church, or you can type in Newport News or 757, and scroll down and find this series titled, Whose Kingdom Have Your Boots Been Under? If you already have the app, this is the time for you to open it. There's a chance for you to follow along, take notes. There's a question of the week that you can follow along with. All the scriptures that I'm going to use are in there. You can email the notes back to yourself. It's been a really helpful thing for people to take notes during the service. So if you're interested in doing that, this is the time to pull out your YouVersion. Just don't check Facebook while you're pulling that out. Well, tonight we are continuing our series entitled, Whose Kingdom Have Your Boots Been Under? And we kicked this thing off 2 weeks ago. And 2 weeks ago we talked about that every single one of us are in a battle. And the battle that we're fighting is for the kingdom of our heart. Who is on the throne of your heart is a battle that all of us have to fight. It is not a one-time battle. It is a daily, it is a weekly, it is a monthly, it is a yearly battle. And the battle is between us and Jesus. Who is going to have control of our heart, of our soul, of our lives? And that first week, we kicked it off and said that the answer is to continually say more about Jesus and less about me. It's got to be more Jesus. I got to focus more on Jesus, think more about Jesus, search out Jesus more, and I've got to take a step back and think about myself less. Last week, then, we talked about worry, and if you weren't here, we talked about how worry is a kingdom issue, and it's a kingdom issue because Jesus made it a kingdom issue. And Jesus specifically said, hey, don't worry. But he wasn't telling us just not to think through consequences or not to think through things. He was telling us to do something specific. And specifically, Jesus wants you to do something with your worry. If you are the type of person who is just consumed with worry, you worry all the time, you need to know that worry is not a sin. What you do with your worry is a sin. And Jesus was saying, hey, when you're worried about something, seek first his kingdom. So when something comes on your mind, it's starting to weigh you down, seek God first. Say, God, hey, how do you want me to handle this situation? God, what do you want me to do? God, I can't take this. Will you fix it? Will you lead me? Will you give me an answer? You seek God first, and then you take an action. You step up. You do whatever you can to fix the problem. Because if you just sit there and think about the worry, it's going to consume you. It's going to turn into anxiety, and it's going to paralyze you, and it's not going to take you anywhere. Well, tonight, I want to continue on by talking about this battle, and it is a fierce battle that we fight. And one of the reasons why it is a battle for us is that we are born into this world thinking that everything is about us. We are. Every single one of us is born into this world thinking that everything revolves around us. I've always kind of known that, but I didn't really grasp it until I had kids. My kids, I remember specifically trying to teach them how to talk. My kids will be 3 March 30th. I have twins, a boy and a girl. And I remember that we would sit down with them and we would say, all right, say da-da. And we try to get them to repeat da-da, mama, cookie. We try to get them to repeat these words. And eventually they started talking. And one of the first things that I remember them saying is something that we never taught them. It's the word mine. And my kids do something that they've never seen my wife or I do. They see something that they like and they grab hold of it and they declare, mine! And if you try to take it from them, it's a temper tantrum. It's like, no, this is mine! And I'm like, where did you learn this from? You've never seen anyone act this way. We've never even talked, like, we've never even shared the word mine with you. It is just inside of them. They think the world revolves around them and anything they see, anything they can put their hands on is mine. It reminds me of the movie Finding Nemo. If you've seen it, those birds, mine, 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 mine. That's what I hear all day long. The other day at lunch, my son was eating some fruit snacks, Ninja Turtle fruit snacks. I like Ninja Turtles. I like fruit snacks, so I wanted one. And I said, Hayden, can I have a fruit snack? And he said, no, they're mine. I said, well, okay. I'm going to teach you something, kid. I know you're only 3, so you might not be able to comprehend this, but I want to teach you something. Those fruit snacks are not yours, buddy. I paid for those fruit snacks. I go to work to earn money for those fruit snacks. And if I want to take all of those daggum fruit snacks, I'm going to take them. And he said, okay, daddy. And then I said, can I have one? He said, no, they're mine. So he didn't quite get it. But we are all on that boat. We are all thinking that everything revolves around us. And I know this. It's not just my kids. It's your kids and it's you. Just in case, though, you haven't had kids yet, or maybe your kids have been grown for a while and you forgot this mindset of mine, I wanted to show you some pictures. There is a hilarious website that is by a dad who has set up this blog where you can download pictures of your toddlers crying, and then you simply put a caption of what caused them to cry. Now, some of you are very sensitive and you hate seeing kids cry, but I think these captions are going to make you laugh. At least that's the intention. I want to show you some of these pictures from this website. It's really, really funny. They're going to come up on the screen for you. I wouldn't let her play with a bag of dog poop. So this toddler is not just a little cry. This is a drool infested, my life is over because mommy said I could not play with a bag of dog poop. Let's go to another one. He can't find his rubber ducky. Where is the rubber ducky? My life is over. He doesn't want to go, even though we've repeatedly told him, we're not going anywhere. I don't want to go. We're not going anywhere. I don't want to go. I told him he doesn't need sunscreen when it's raining. So I want to just point out to you that this toddler is not crying because he has put sunscreen all over his clothes and his legs. He's crying because his mom said, honey, it's raining outside. You don't need sunscreen. No, I want sunscreen. He met Bill Murray. Someone ate all the muffins. It was him. I love that. Where did my muffins go? She dropped a receipt we got from the gas station. I love this picture. If you have toddlers, or if you remember having toddlers, you've made the face of that mom multiple times. My wife and I make that face on a daily basis. It is an exhausting face. It is like, are you serious right now? You just got that receipt. Why does it have such a hold over you? Why is it such a big deal? No, I dropped the receipt. You can't reach the pennies. They're too far away, the pennies. I just can't get to them. The microwave ate my lunch. Poor guy. His world is over. The microwave ate his lunch. There was a hot dog hidden in his cornbread. That one makes me laugh so hard. Who put this hot dog in here? We said she couldn't have more bacon. No! Now, I just want to point out that with the exception of that last one, none of those deserve tears. Now, the last one I get, you can't have more bacon. Ah, no! But everything else, it's like, really? Why are they so worked up about it? Why does it have such a hold over them? Is it just because they're toddlers? No, it's because they are born into this world thinking that everything revolves around them. And when they don't get their way, it is an epic meltdown. And the crazy thing is that all of us have grown up. We physically have grown up. We're no longer toddlers. Everyone in this room is an adult now. But a lot of us haven't transitioned from the toddler mindset. And we have the exact same reactions that they do. No, I didn't get my way. Why did you say that to me? Oh, you don't vote like me. Ah! There's no more bacon. We stress out. We freak out. We are just constantly fighting people because they're not doing what we want them to do. I'm reminded of this on a regular basis when I'm driving in traffic. I really don't have huge road rage. I feel like I do pretty good with managing my temper, but there are some times when people just can't read my mind and it makes me really mad. The other day, this week, I was driving and the lane that I was in suddenly ended. They were doing construction and there was no warning. They just had a light arrow coming up and I came around the corner and there it was. And the car next to me was going just fast enough that I couldn't get in front of him, but just slow enough that I couldn't get behind him. And I don't know, you guys probably don't do this. You're probably better humans than I am. But when someone annoys me, I give them the glare. And I'm glaring at this person like, why can't you read my mind? Don't you know what I want you to do? I am mad at you. Why? Because they didn't do what I wanted them to do. We are in a constant battle against ourselves. It's a battle against Jesus about who has control of our heart. We are constantly fighting because we think things are mine, mine, mine. I love this quote by Jonathan Martin. He's a pastor in North Carolina. It says, the lie in our minds is that we are all stars of a cosmic movie. It's an illusion. We're all extras. Every single one of us thinks that we're born, and we are born into this thing being Brad Pitt or Angelina Jolie. We are the star. Everything revolves around us. I'm mad because you didn't meet my needs. I'm the star. I'm the big shot. Why aren't you meeting what I want you to do? Why aren't you helping me out? Why aren't you serving me? Every single one of us thinks we're the star. But the truth of the matter is, none of us are the star. We're all extras. Jesus is the star of this thing. And the quicker that we can wrap our minds around that and get out of the way, the better our lives will be. This world is all about Jesus. But we're going to have to constantly fight against this battle of saying, mine, mine, mine. So tonight what I want to do is I want to take us through just some comparing and contrasting, some things that are pretty common for our culture, common for most of us in here, some things that are signs of trying to build your kingdom, and I want to compare that with things that we should be doing to build God's kingdom. And I want you to know that I'm right here with you. There are a lot of these things that I struggle with that I'm still working on. But I think this would be a good starting point. I could do a lot more than the five that we're going to cover tonight, but I just want to go over five things that I think will point to whose kingdom you're building. These, in fact, are called building your kingdom versus building Jesus' kingdom. Number one, we collect stuff for ourselves versus we collect stuff for others. This is a sign of whose kingdom you're building. We collect stuff for ourselves versus we collect stuff for others. Your kingdom is all about collecting stuff for yourself. God's kingdom is about collecting stuff for others. Now, I struggle with this one because I am a collector. I think that I'm pretty frugal. I don't just go out and waste a lot of money. In fact, I don't spend a ton of money on myself. My wife says on a regular basis that it is much better for me to go to the grocery store than her, because she'll go to the grocery store with a list and come out with 50 things that we don't need. I go to the grocery store with a list, and I come back with everything that was on the list. I don't buy things that are not on the list. That's just my mindset. And so I fool myself to say, you know, I'm really not that selfish of a person. I'm a giving person. I give of my time. I give money. I give to others. But then I look around my house and I see the things that I collect. Some people would call it hoarding. I call it collecting. I collect things like Lakers jerseys. I have about 12 Lakers jerseys. Who needs more than one Lakers jersey? This guy. How often do I wear them? This year? Not once. But I got them. They're in my closet. 4 different players. 12 jerseys. I like to collect things like cardboard cutouts, life-size cardboard cutouts that look like actors and comic book characters. And over the years, I've collected, I've lost track, but I think it's about 22, 23, 24, somewhere around there. And in our previous house, they were all up in the guest bedroom, all around the house. And but we have moved since then, and for some reason, unbeknownst to me, they have not made it out of the garage. They are just in the garage, in storage. And you would think that since we're not using these collectibles, that I would get rid of them. I would give, because people really want cardboard cutouts. I don't know if you know that or not, but people really want these things. But no, they're just sitting in my garage. Why? Because I collect them. I have a shelf in our guest bedroom that is filled with action figures. And I want to make sure that you understand something. Girls play with dolls. Boys play with action figures. These are action figures. They're not Barbie dolls. They are superheroes and Indiana Jones and Star Wars. And I've had this collection since I was about 5 years old. And they are on a shelf, a prominent shelf in our guest bedroom. And my kids know that they are not to touch these toys. They are not to play with. These are daddy's toys. I collect, like, what good are they doing? They're collecting dust, but they're sitting, they're mine. I've collected these things. And maybe for you, it's not cardboard cutouts or jerseys or action figures, but there is something in your life that you're collecting. Maybe it's stuff for your house. Maybe it is homes. Maybe it's cars. Maybe it's cool gadgets and you love the next new gadget that Apple throws out there. We are all collectors. We are all some type of hoarder. We are all buying stuff and buying stuff and buying stuff. And it causes us to have this mindset that I don't have everything that I need. Have you ever just looked at your house and said, man, if we just had this, then I would be happy. But if you got that, it would be something else. We are in this constant pull of just collecting stuff and it never satisfies us. And I think this is why Jesus had this to say. He says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And what was Jesus' point? Was Jesus' point that we should not have a savings account, that we should not save money for retirement? No. Jesus wasn't saying, hey, you know, just spend all your money out there. Don't even worry about retirement. That's not Jesus' point. Jesus' point is, what is the condition of your heart? And you can tell the condition of your heart by your treasures. What are the things that you treasure? Let me just ask you a rhetorical question. What if it got stolen tonight would wreck your life? If your car, if you walked out in the parking lot and it was stolen, would it wreck your life? If your house burnt down? If your pictures, if your Facebook account got hacked, I mean, what would wreck your life? Those are your treasures. And there is nothing wrong with having some treasures in this life. There is a lot wrong with dying with treasures. Because Jesus says you can't take them with you. So all this hoarding that we're doing, all this collecting that we're doing, this stuff that we love, it is not going to do us any good in eternity. And so Jesus says, hey, your stuff is not just for you. Your stuff is to be a blessing to other people. So your house, I know you worked really hard to get into that house, but it's not just your house. It is your house to be used as a blessing for God's kingdom. Your car, I know you love your car, but your car is not just for you. It is to be a blessing for other people. Your cardboard cutouts, I know you all have them. They're not just for you. They are to be a blessing for other people. Every single thing that you have, it is not just for you. It is not meant to make yourself famous or to feel good or to establish your kingdom. Your stuff is given to you so that you can build Jesus' kingdom. And we have experienced an amazing miracle of this. If you're new to Next Level, you may not know this scene that we've kind of jumped in, but for 2 years, we've been trying to find a property of our own, a space of our own, tried to look for something, and this is what we found. We have found that there are a lot of churches that are for sale in our area. Empty churches. No one's meeting there. No one's met there for years. And yet, instead of blessing someone else with their church and saying, hey, you can lease to own it, you can move in now, you can rent it from us, hey, we'll give it to you. Instead of having that mindset, they've hired realtors who have come in and charged millions of dollars. And so we've looked at some of these properties, and we looked at a property that was $1.6 million. And it was too small for us. The auditorium could barely even hold 100 people. And so these churches that we could afford, we were way too big to even go in. And the churches that we could fit in, we couldn't afford. And so we just kept saying, man, God's got to do something. And we got a call from a great kingdom-minded pastor. In fact, he's going to be here hopefully in 2 weeks so that we can honor him. Because I told him I just wanted to honor him and his kingdom-mindedness. But his name is Chris, and as I was meeting with him this week, Chris said, he was telling me about all the things that his church has done and amazing things that they've done in our community. And he said, you know what, I never viewed this building as our own. It was our whole goal to give it away as long as we owned it. He said, I never knew that we were going to actually give it away, but that was our mindset. So it comes to a point where they were not able to meet anymore, and so he instantly said, hey, we're not going to ask for what we could get for this land. Probably a couple million dollars. We're going to gift it to someone else. And what I want you to hear from that is that's not just a blessing for us. That's a part of our legacy that we can't just take that and hoard that and collect that and say, oh, look at us. We are given this to be a blessing to other people. And this is setting up the blueprint for the rest of our church's existence. That everything that we have, our talents, our gifts, our worship leaders, our chairs, our people, everything that we have is not given to us to make ourselves feel good or to be famous or to make ourselves look good. It is given to us so that we can be a blessing to other people. Kingdom living views everything that we have as a temporary things that we can use to build God's permanent kingdom. Kingdom living views everything that we have as temporary things that we can use to build God's permanent kingdom. Everything that you have, your computer, your gifts, your talents, your sense of humor, everything that you have should be viewed as temporary. I just have this for the average lifespan is about 79 years. I have 79 years to use everything that God's given me to build His kingdom. Because we're not going to be here forever. Everything we have is to build God's kingdom. Number two, we live for ourselves versus we live for God. We live for ourselves versus we live for God. Now, the first one was about our material possessions, about how we spend our money. This one is about how we spend our energy, our time, our thoughts. Is it on ourselves? Is it to please ourselves versus trying to live for and please God? I love this verse. It's very convicting. It says, do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked. A man reaps what he sows. Whoever sows to please their flesh from the flesh will reap destruction. Whoever sows to please the Spirit from the Spirit will reap eternal life. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers. I love the mindset of this verse. It starts off by saying, hey, do not be deceived. Don't be tricked. Don't fall into this being punked. God cannot be mocked. And what does that mean? Does that mean that we cannot make fun of God? No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying that God, you cannot make a mockery of God. How do we make a mockery of God? We make a mockery of God when we receive the gifts of God and then we keep it all to ourselves. That makes a mockery of God. Why? Because Jesus gave his life up for us. He gave everything away. Everything. And he spent his time and his focus and his energy pouring it out to God and saying, hey, I'm going to live for God. Even when it's hard, I'm going to live for God. And it would have been very easy for Jesus to say, you know what? I like this earth. This is a pretty good place to be. I'm just going to build my kingdom. I'm going to build things for myself. I'm going to protect myself. Hey, they're coming to arrest me, to crucify me. Fight them off. Get rid of them. I want to stay here. But what did Jesus do? He willingly laid down his life for us. So making a mockery of God is when you receive the gifts that he has given you and you just say that, hey, I'm too tired, I'm too busy to make a difference for someone else. In the verse that we just read, it says, take every opportunity to do good to all people. Don't get tired of doing good to all people. Why? Because God didn't get tired of giving to you. Every single month, we do something called Make a Difference. And this to us is just scratching the surface. It's the tip of the iceberg. This is not supposed to be our final mission strategy. It's not supposed to be our end-all of how we're making a difference in the community. It's the bare minimum. We've just said that as a church, we want to do something. We don't want every week to get by where we're just thinking about services and our people. We want to be thinking constantly about other people. And so every month, we partner with a local or a global organization, and we just ask them, hey, how can we make a difference? Well, when we first started the church 2 years ago, people signed up for everything that we did the day that we threw it out there. It was easy to get volunteers to make a difference. People were excited about making a difference, and I hope that you guys are still excited about making a difference, but I just look at this year compared to last year, and last year when we hosted the homeless here, every spot was filled up before the deadline. And this year, it's like, are we going to get all the people that we need? And I'm not trying to make anyone feel guilty. I'm not trying to guilt you into serving. I just think something has happened. Something is starting to happen with us. We have started to get a little bit comfortable. We've started to say things, yeah, I did that last year. And, oh, I'm tired. Man, I'm tired. Can't I just focus on myself for a little bit? And the verse that we just read says, hey, do not get tired of doing good. Don't get tired of it. I know that we've done this. I know we did it last year. I know we'll have another Make a Difference next year, but take advantage of it. Use it to spur you on to do great things for God. Why? Because God doesn't get tired of doing good things for you. We live for ourselves versus we live for God. The verse that we just read, it specifically said, you reap what you sow. And this is not talking about karma. Karma is something that has just kind of fallen into Christianity, and people talk about karma all the time, and karma is not a Christian mindset. Karma says that you get what you deserve. If you do good things, you deserve good things. If you do something bad, it's going to come back and bite you. And when this verse says that you reap what you sow, it's not talking about, hey, if you do something good, then you're going to get good things. It's saying, hey, you reap what you sow. When God has done something good in you, and then you go out and you do good to other people, you will reap a harvest because their lives will be changed. So don't get tired. Don't get done. Don't say we did this last month. You pour all your energy into helping other people make a difference, and you will see that it helps people fall in love with God. Number three, a me mentality versus a we mentality. A me mentality versus a we mentality. One of the first things that God will point out to you after you become a Christian is that it's not about you. Now, I want to clarify this just for a second because it is partially about you. Jesus did die for you, and God does like to give you good gifts, and God does answer your prayers, and God does listen to your prayers, and it is partially about you. But the problem that we have is because we think that we are the main character of the universe. We think that God needs to be on our beck and call and be all about us. And God is all about you, but he's also about the person you're sitting next to and the person behind you and the person that doesn't even live in America. It is not just about me, it is about we. I love this verse. It is so challenging. It says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. This is a call for Christians. If you're here today and you say, yep, I'm a Christian, I'm a Christ follower, I've given my life to Jesus, then the challenge for you is to not make everything about you, but in humility to put other people's needs first. Now, this is incredibly difficult. It's incredibly difficult. Over a year ago in February, my wife and I and a few friends flew out to L.A. to just take some vacation and do all the things that you do in L.A. I'm a huge Lakers fan, so we went to a Lakers game. They beat the Boston Celtics that night. It was awesome. Okay. We also took a tour of Warner Brothers Studio. I love Hollywood. I love movies, so I was eating that up. It was incredible. One of the main things that I wanted to do by going to L.A. is I wanted to see celebrities. And not just see them, I wanted to meet them, I wanted to take pictures with them, I wanted to Instagram it. So I was all jazzed up about we're gonna meet celebrities. And we ran into a few, we saw a few, but there was one day in particular that it just was filled with the potential to meet celebrities. It was award season, Oscar season, it was all sorts of awards. So there were all these celebrities there, and there was a huge tent out by this beach, and I said, hey, we need to go to this tent first. And everyone that I was with, for some reason, did not care about meeting celebrities like I did. So they said, no, let's walk the beach. And I'm like, the beach will be there forever. Let's go see the tent. But no one wanted to listen to me, so we took a tour of the beach. And when we get to the tent, they tell us, oh, yeah, just about 10 minutes ago, Jennifer Lawrence was here taking pictures with everyone. And I was like, curse you. We could have met Jennifer Lawrence. So we leave from there and we're walking, and as we're walking across the street, I'm still kind of fuming a little bit about missing this opportunity, and a car stops just a few inches from, like, you know, kind of running into us, and I look at the car, and it's Dave Grohl. If you're not familiar with Dave Grohl, he is the drummer from the former band Nirvana. He's also the lead singer of the Foo Fighters, and I looked at him, and I declared to everyone that was with me, that's Dave Grohl, and everybody that was with me has kind of had the same look that you do. They said, who? And so I'm looking at Dave Grohl, and I'm saying, that's Dave Grohl. He's the drummer from Nirvana, the lead singer of the Foo Fighters. And he's looking at me saying this, and he kind of nods, and he waves, and I'm like, Dave Grohl, just wave to me. We walked across the street, and from that point on, I said that I need to be quicker with my cell phone. I need to get my pictures ready, because I didn't get a picture of Dave Grohl, and I really wanted pictures of celebrities. So from that point on, I put my hand in my pocket on my cell phone, so if I saw a celebrity, I could just pull it out real quick and take a picture of him. Well, from there, we could not find our car. None of us paid attention to where we parked, and so we were circling around L.A., just wandering around, and we got to the point where the three girls that were with us said that they thought the car was to the left, and my buddy Dan thought the car was to the right. Now, Dan and I should not be trusted with any type of driving instructions or directions. We both have the worst sense of direction. And the only reason I went with him is I was afraid he was going to get lost in L.A. and we would never find him. So I said, I'll go with Dan, and you girls go over that way. And so we're walking around, and we walked blocks and blocks and blocks and blocks. We were dead tired, and Dan and I kept circling. We kept saying, we think it's right here, and we would circle. We've already seen this. Well, finally, the girls find the car, and they start texting Dan. And Dan gets a text message, and he texts him back. He says, okay, we're headed your way. But I don't know if we were just so far away or we weren't moving fast enough, but they kept texting Dan. And Dan was just a little frustrated with all the texts, so he stopped answering their texts. Well, at that point, the girls jumped to the natural conclusion that we had been man-napped in L.A., and so they kind of start freaking out. And so they're texting a lot, and me and Dan walk up to this crosswalk, and we stop and wait for the light. And when we stop, a car pulls up in front of us, and the person that's driving it is Dennis Quaid, the actor, the Dennis Quaid. I get really excited about this, and I have my hand on my cell phone, and I'm going to take a picture of Dennis Quaid. So I pull my phone out, and right when I go to slide it over, my wife calls. And so when I slide, instead of going to my camera, it answers the phone. And at this point, I'm stressed because Dennis Quaid's about to drive off at any second. And so I'm hitting the button here, trying to end this phone call. And all it's doing is lowering the phone call. And so she's on there, and I can't open my camera. And I'm getting really stressed out. And I hear my wife on the other end. She's saying, Rob, are you okay? Because she thinks I've been man-napped. So she's like, Rob, are you okay? Rob, are you okay? And I just declare, because Dennis Quaid is about to drive off. And I just declare in the phone, Monica, you are killing me. Because I could not hang up on her. And Dennis Quaid drives off, and I don't get a picture of him. And I was mad. I was angry. And we finally get back to the car, and I hear how my wife is not very happy with me. Because she didn't know that I saw Dennis Quaid. She just thought that we were being man-napped, and I told her she was killing me. Well, why did that make me so frustrated? Because my wife wasn't doing what I wanted her to do. Because it was all about me taking a picture of Dennis Quaid. And not about taking a second to say, hey, babe, I know you're worried about us, but we're okay. I'm going to hang up on you real nicely because Dennis Quaid is in front of me. But I couldn't do that. Why? Because we're constantly in this battle of making everything about us. Number four, holding on to bitterness versus holding on to love. I want to quickly read a story to you that happened to Jesus. It says, when one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited Jesus over saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner. I want to stop there just for a second. So the scene is Jesus gets invited over to someone's house, and a woman breaks through this party. She wasn't invited. And she is weeping at Jesus' feet, and she's pouring love and attention over him. And the Pharisee who invited Jesus over says, man, this guy must not be a prophet. If he was a prophet, he would know that that woman is a sinner. Jesus knows what's going on, so Jesus responds, and he says, Simon, I have something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two people owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he forgave the debts of both. Now, which one of them will love him more? Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. You have judged correctly, Jesus said. Then he turned toward the woman and said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house, and you didn't give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven loves little. I want to point out something quickly with this verse, and what it is that this woman was not forgiven because she loved Jesus. She loved Jesus because she was forgiven. And because she was forgiven from a lot of sins, I don't know, maybe she was a prostitute, maybe she was having an affair, I don't know what her sins were, but everyone knew that she was a sinner. And the Pharisee pridefully looked at her and said, hey, she's a sinner. I've got my act together, but she's a sinner. I'm welcome in the presence of God, but she's not welcome in the presence of God. And Jesus says, hey, here's the deal, buddy. Let me ask you a question. If two people were owned large sums of money, one only 50 and one 500, and that debt was forgiven, which one would be more excited? And he's like, yeah, the one that's been forgiven 500. And he's like, you're right. The reason this woman is pouring so much love over me is because she actually acknowledges that she's been forgiven of huge sins. And you and your pride are sitting there and acting like you've never been forgiven of anything. One of the biggest things that we as Christians have to wrestle through is this mindset of holding on to bitterness versus holding on to love. Every single one of us in the room has been wounded by someone. Every single one of us. And maybe it was your parents, maybe it was an ex-spouse, maybe it was an ex-relationship, maybe it was your kids. We've all been wounded by someone. We've all been hurt. But if you're holding on to that bitterness, to that anger, it is a sign that you are building your kingdom. Why? Because Jesus says, if you've been forgiven much, you're going to love much. And I've never met anyone who has truly grasped God's forgiveness that did not have an easy time loving other people. And not just loving people that look like you and act like you and agree with you, but truly loving people. Why? Because Jesus first loved you. One of the greatest things that we have as Christians is that we've been forgiven. I want you to know that this is not just you've been forgiven, this is I've been forgiven. I am the chief of sinners. I am the worst of the worst. And yet God loves me anyway. And because I've had my sins forgiven, it causes me to fall at the feet of Jesus and to give Him lavish love back. Last one. I deserve this verse by the grace of God. I deserve this verse by the grace of God. One thing that we have to really fight through is this mindset that I deserved this. You see this come out when you are dealt with either a good situation or a bad situation. If a bad situation happens to you, something bad, cancer, you lose your job, someone breaks up with you, when something bad happens, if your first thought is, why did this happen to me? I do not deserve this. It is a sign that you are building your kingdom. When something great happens to you, do you think, man, this is awesome. I do deserve this. I gave a little money at church. I volunteered. I'm a good person. I deserve this. Well, I want to show you the reality of living for God's kingdom. The verse says, for it is by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God. Not by works, so that no one can boast. You know why we have good gifts from God? It's not because we've earned it. It's because God is good. And I want to make sure that you guys get this. And I want to make sure that you get this by hearing something clearly from my heart. I am not trying to make anyone feel bad, because lots of people have said what I'm about to say to you. Lots of people, when they've heard about this building, have responded with, Rob, you deserve this. And many of you might have even said that. I'm not keeping account. I don't even remember who said that. It's just something that people have said. Rob, you're a good person. Rob, you're being a pastor. You deserve this. And I appreciate that. But the truth of the matter is, I deserve hell. I don't deserve a church building. I've done nothing to get God's attention. I've done nothing where God said, man, you know what? I'm really proud of that guy. Let me give him a free church building. Now, I am a dirty, rotten sinner saved by the grace of God. And everything that we get from God is not because we deserved it, both the bad and the good. Something bad happens to you, it's not just because you messed up. It's not because God is just giving you a cosmic spanking because he's mad at you. Things happen in this world. Good things, bad things. But here's the awesome thing about God. God brings all things to the good of those who love him. All things. So something bad happens to you, our God is so good, he can find goodness even in something bad. Something good happens to you, that is a gift of God. It's not because you deserve it. And we've got to get out of this mindset of, yep, I deserve it. No, that is entitlement, of thinking that we are the star of this thing and God needs to be our vending machine that just gives us what we want when we want it. We don't deserve goodness from God. We get it despite the fact that we're all dirty, rotten sinners. And when you can transition that mindset to say every good gift is a gift from God and every bad thing that happens to me is a chance for me to receive God's love, it's going to change the way that you live in this world. Let me pray for you. God, thank you so much for this day. Thanks for, God, just pointing the way. It is so hard to live for your kingdom. And we thank you that you've forgiven us for our sins. We thank you that you continue to forgive us. We thank you, God, that you love us radically, that you model for us what living for others is all about. And God, I just ask that today you would just spark something in us, that we would live more for you than we live for ourselves. I ask, God, that you would help us to continue to seek out and figure out what it means to build your kingdom. God, I thank you so much for this day. I thank you for the amazing, amazing people that you've brought to Next Level Church. I thank you for your grace. I thank you for your goodness. We give you this rest of this night. In Jesus' name, amen.